coming up. Just think. They're probably just sitting right here in this very room waiting to be discovered. Stacy cast TJ an annoyed look, but didn't speak. Y'all sure are a sorry lot this morning, TJ observed. A fella's just wasting his know-how talking to y'all. Ain't nobody asked you to give it, said Stacy. Well, you don't have to get snippety about it, replied TJ haughtily. Again, silence prevailed, but that wouldn't do for TJ. Say, how about we sneak down to that old Wallace store and learn how to do them new dances?
Mama told us not to go down there, Stacy said.
You some mama's boy or something? You gotta do everything your mama tells?
You go on if you wanna, said Stacy quietly, not rising to TJ's bait. But we staying here. Again, silence. Then TJ said,
Say, y'all hear the latest about them nightmen?
Suddenly, all eyes turned from the fire and riveted themselves upon him. Our faces were eager question marks. We were totally in TJ's power.
What about them?
Stacy asked, almost evenly. TJ, of course, intended to nurse the moment for as long as he could.
You see, when a fella's as smart as me, he gets to know things that other folks don't. Now, this kind of information ain't for the ears of little kids, so I really shouldn't even tell y'all.
Then don't, said Stacy with smooth finality, turning back toward the fire as if he cared not at all about the nightmen. Taking his cue, I nudged Christopher John, and Christopher John nudged Little Man, and the three of us forced ourselves to stare into the fire in feigned disinterest. Without a captive audience, TJ had to re-interest us by getting to the point.
Well, about a week ago, they rode down to Mr. Sam Tatum's place, you know, down the Jackson Road toward Strawberry, and you know what they done?
Stacy, Little Man, and I kept our eyes upon the fire, but Christopher John piped eagerly,
What?
I poked Christopher John, and he turned guiltily around, but TJ, triumphant, with an assured audience of one, settled back in his chair ready to prolong the suspense.
You know, Mama'd kill me if she'd knowed I was telling this. I heard her and Miss Claire Thompson talking about it.
They was real scared.
Don't know why, though. Them old night men sure wouldn't scare me none, like I told Claude.
Hey, y'all, Stacy said, standing and motioning us up. Mama said she wanted us to take some milk and butter down to Ms. Jackson before noon. We'd better get started. I nodded, and Christopher John, Little Man, and I got up.
Tarred and feathered him, TJ announced hastily.
Poured the blackest tar they could find all over him, then plastered him with chicken feathers.
TJ laughed.
Can you imagine that?
But why? Asked Little Man, forgetting our ploy.
This time, TJ did not slow down.
I don't know if y'all's little ears should hear this, but it seems he called Mr. Jim Lee Barnett a liar. He's the man who runs a mercantile down in Strawberry. Mr. Tatum's supposed to done told him that he ain't ordered up all them things Mr. Barnett done charged him for. Mr. Barnett said he had all them things Mr. Tatum ordered writ down, and when Mr. Tatum asked to see the list of his, Mr. Barnett says, You calling me a liar, boy? And Mr. Tatum says, Yes, sir, I guess I is. That done it.
Then it wasn't 'cause of the bus, Christopher John blurted out.
Bus? What's a bus got to do with it?
Nothing, said Stacy quickly, nothing at all.
Well, if anybody said them night men was down in here 'cause of some stupid bus, they crazy, said TJ authoritatively. 'Cause my information come direct from Miss Claire Thompson, who seen Mr. Tatum herself.
You sure? Stacy asked.
Sure. Sure I'm sure. When do I ever say anything when I ain't sure?
Stacy smiled with relief.
Come on, let's get the milk.
All of us went into the kitchen, then to the bedrooms to get our coats. When we got outside, TJ remembered that he had left his cap by the fire and ran back to retrieve it. As soon as we were alone, Little Man asked,
Stacy, you really think them night men put tar and feathers all over Mr. Tatum?
I suppose so, said Stacy.
Little Man frowned, but it was Christopher John who spoke, whispering shrilly, as if a stray morning ghost might overhear.
If they ever find out about the bus, you think they're gonna put tar and feathers all over us?
Little Man's frown deepened, and he observed gravely, if they did, we'd never get clean again.
Cassie, said Christopher John, his eyes wide, was you real scared when you seen him?
Little Man shivered with excitement.
I wish I could have seen him.
Well, I don't, declared Christopher John. In fact, I wish I'd never heard of no night men, or buses, or secrets, or holes in the road.
And with that outburst, he stuffed his pudgy hands into his thin jacket, pressed his lips firmly together, and refused to say another word. After a few moments, Stacy said, What's keeping TJ? The rest of us shrugged, then followed Stacy back up the porch into Mama's room. As we entered, TJ jumped. He was standing at the desk, with Mama's W.E.B. Du Bois's The Negro in his hands.
That don't look like your cap, said Stacy.
Aw, man, I ain't done nothing. Just looking at Ms. Logan's history book, that's all. I'm mighty interested in that place called Egypt she been telling us about, and them black kings that was ruling back then.
Still talking, he casually put down the book and picked up his cap. All four of us looked accusingly at TJ, and he halted.
Say, what is this? What's the meaning of sneaking up on me like that anyway? Y'all think I was looking for them test questions or something? Shoot, a fella'd think you didn't trust him.
Then, thrusting his arm around Stacy's shoulders, he chided.
Friends gotta trust each other, Stacy, 'cause ain't nothing like a true friend.
And with those words of wisdom, he left the room, leaving us to wonder how he had managed to slink out of this one. The Monday after his arrival, Mr. Morrison had moved into the deserted tenant shack that stood in the south pasture. It was a sorry mess, that house. Its door hung sadly from a broken hinge, its porch floorboards were rotted, and its one-room interior was densely occupied by rats, spiders, and other field creatures. But Mr. Morrison was a quiet man, almost shy, and although Mama had offered him lodging in our house, he preferred the old shack. Mama sensed that Mr. Morrison was a private person, and she did not object to the move. But she did send the boys and me to the house to help clean it. Little Man, Christopher John, and I took to Mr. Morrison immediately and had no objections to the cleaning. Anyone who was a friend of Papa's was all right in our book. Besides, when he was near, night men and burnings and midnight tarrings faded into a hazy distance. But Stacy remained aloof and had little to do with him. After the cleaning, I asked Mama if Christopher John, Little Man, and I could go visit Mr. Morrison, but she said no.
But, Mama, I want to know more about him, I explained. I just want to know how come he's so big.
You know about as much as you need to know, she decided. And long as Mr. Morrison stays here, that's his house. If he wants you down there, he'll ask you.
Don't know how come y'all want to go down there no way, Stacy said moodily when Mama was out of hearing.
'Cause we like him, that's why, I answered, tired of his distant attitude toward Mr. Morrison.
Then, as discreetly as I could, I said, What's the matter with you, boy, not liking Mr. Morrison?
Stacy shrugged. I like him all right.
Don't act that way.
Stacy looked away from me.
Don't need him here. All that work he doing, I could have done it myself.
Oh, you couldn't have done no such thing. Besides, Papa didn't just bring him here to do no work. You know how come he really here.
Stacy turned toward me haughtily.
I could have taken care of that, too.
I rolled my eyes at him, but held my peace. I didn't feel like a fight, and as long as Mr. Morrison was within hollering distance of the back porch, it made little difference to me what Stacy thought he could do.
I sure wouldn't want that big old man staying at my place, said TJ on the way to school. I bet you he get mad one time, he take old little man and swing him over the tree yonder like he was nothing but a twig.
He laughed. Little man set his lips and stared angrily up.
Course, I could probably about do that myself.
Couldn't neither, denied little man.
Hush, man, said Stacy. TJ, leave man alone.
Oh, I ain't bothering him. Little man's my buddy, ain't you, man?
Little man scowled, but didn't reply. TJ turned back to Stacy.
You ready for that history test?
Hope so, said Stacy. But I keep forgetting them dates.
Betcha I could help you, if you'd be nice.
How? You worse than I am about dates. TJ grinned, then slyly pulled a folded sheet of paper from his pocket and handed it to Stacy. Stacy unfolded it, looked at it curiously, then frowned.
You planning on cheating? Well, no, I ain't planning on it, said TJ seriously. Just if I gotta.
Well, you ain't gonna, said Stacy, tearing the paper in two.
Hey, what's the matter with you, man?
Cried TJ, grabbing for the paper. But Stacy turned his back to him and tore the paper into bits, then deposited them in the gully.
Man, that sure ain't right. I wouldn't do you that way.
Maybe not, replied Stacy. But at least this way, you won't get into no trouble. TJ mumbled.
If failing ain't trouble, I don't know what is.
Little man, Christopher John, Claude, and I were sitting on the bottom step of the seventh grade class building after school, waiting for Stacy and TJ, when the front door banged open and TJ shot out and tore across the yard.
What's the matter with him?
Asked Christopher John.
Ain't he gonna wait for Stacy?
The rest of the seventh grade, led by Little Willie Wiggins and Mo Turner, spilled from the building.
There he go,
cried Little Willie as TJ disappeared on the forest road. Mo Turner yelled,
Let's see where he's going.
Then he and the three other boys dashed away in pursuit of TJ. But the others stood restlessly near the steps as if school had not yet ended.
Hey, what's going on? I asked Little Willie. What's everybody waiting round for? And where's Stacy?
Demanded Little Man. Little Willie smiled. Stacy inside with Ms. Logan. He got whipped today.
Whipped? I cried. What? Can nobody whip Stacy? Who done it?
Your mama, laughed Little Willie.
Mama?
Christopher John, Little Man, and I exclaimed.
Little Willie nodded. Yep. In front of everybody.
I swallowed hard, feeling very sorry for my older brother. It was bad enough to be whipped in front of 30 others by a teacher, but to get it by one's own mother, now that was downright embarrassing.
Why'd Mama do that?
Asked Christopher John.
She caught him with cheat notes during the history examination.
Mama knows Stacy wouldn't cheat, I declared.
Little Willie shrugged.
Well, whether she know it or not, she sure enough whipped him. Course, now, she give him a chance to get out of it when he said he wasn't cheating, and she asked him how he got them cheat notes. But Stacy wouldn't tell on old TJ, and you know good and well old TJ wasn't about to say them notes was his.
Cheat notes? But how'd TJ get cheat notes? Stacy got rid of them things this morning.
Come noontime, though, replied Little Willie, TJ was in them woods, busy writing himself another set. Me and Mo seen him.
Well, what the devil was Stacy doing with him?
Well, we was in the middle of the examination, and old TJ slips out these cheat notes. Me and Clarence here was sitting right behind him and TJ, and seen the whole thing. Stacy was sitting right side of TJ, and when he seen them notes, he motioned TJ to put them away. At first, TJ wouldn't do it, but then he seen Ms. Logan starting toward him, and he slipped Stacy the notes. Well, Stacy didn't see Ms. Logan coming when he took them notes, and by the time he saw her, it was too late to get rid of them.
Wasn't nothing Ms. Logan could do but whip him.
Failed him, too. And old TJ just sat there and ain't said a word, interjected Clarence, laughing. But knowing Stacy,
I bet your old TJ ain't gonna get away with it, chuckled Little Willie. And TJ know it, too. That's why he lit out of here like he done, and I bet you.
Hey, Stacy!
Everyone turned as Stacy bounded down the steps. His square face was unsmiling, but there was no anger in his voice when he asked quietly, "Anybody seen TJ?" All the students answered at once, indicating that TJ had headed west toward home, then surrounded Stacy as he started across the lawn. Christopher John, Little Man, Claude, and I followed. When we reached the crossroads, Mo Turner was waiting. TJ went down to the Wallace store, he announced. Stacy stopped, and so did everyone else. Stacy stared past Jefferson Davis, then back down the road toward Great Faith. Looking over his shoulder, he found me and ordered, "Cassie, you and Christopher John and Man go on home."
"You come too,"
I said, afraid of where he was going. "Got something to take care of first," he said, walking away.
"Mama gonna take care of you too," I hollered after him. "You know she said we wasn't to go down there, and she find out she gonna wear you out again. Papa too."
But Stacy did not come back. For a moment, Little Man, Christopher John, Claude, and I stood watching Stacy and the others heading swiftly northward. Then Little Man said, "I want to see what he gonna do."
"I don't," declared Christopher John.
"Come on," I said, starting after Stacy with Little Man and Claude beside me.
"I don't want no whipping,"
objected Christopher John, standing alone in the crossroads. But when he saw that we were not coming back, he puffed to join us, grumbling all the while. The Wallace store stood almost a half mile beyond Jefferson Davis, on a triangular lot that faced the Soldiers' Bridge crossroads. Once the Granger Plantation store, it had been run by the Wallaces for as long as I could remember, and most of the people within the 40-mile stretch between Smellings Creek and Strawberry shopped there. The other three corners of the crossroads were forest land, black and dense. The store consisted of a small building with a gas pump in front and a storage house in back. Beyond the store, against the forest edge, were two gray clapboard houses and a small garden. But there were no fields. The Wallaces did not farm. Stacy and the other students were standing in the doorway of the store when Little Man, Christopher John, Claude, and I ran up. We squeezed through so we could see inside. A man we all knew was Caleb Wallace stood behind the counter. A few other men sat around a stove playing checkers, and Jeremy's older brothers, R.W. and Melvin, who had dropped out of school long ago, leaned sleepy-eyed against the counter staring at us.
"Y'all go on to the back," said Caleb Wallace, "lessen y'all want to buy something. Mr. Dewberry got the music going already."
As we turned away from the entrance, Melvin Sims said,
"Just look at all the little niggas come to dance,"
and the laughter of the men filled the room. Christopher John tugged at my arm.
"I don't like this place, Cassie. Let's go on home."
"We can't leave without Stacy," I said. Music beckoned from the storage room, where Dewberry Wallace was placing round brown bottles on a small table as we crowded in. Aside from the table, there was no furniture in the room. Boxes lined the walls, and the center floor had been cleared for dancing. Several older couples from Great Faith were already engaged in movements I had never seen before.
"What they doing?" asked Little Man.
I shrugged.
"I guess that's what they call dancing."
"There you go,"
someone shouted as the back door of the storeroom slammed shut. Stacy turned quickly and sped to the back of the building. TJ was fleeing straight toward Soldiers Road. Stacy tore across the Wallace yard and, leaping high like a forest fox, fell upon TJ, knocking him down. The two boys rolled toward the road, each trying to keep the other's back pinned to the ground, but then Stacy, who was stronger, gained the advantage, and TJ, finding that he could not budge him, cried,
"Hey, wait a minute, man, let me explain."
Stacy did not let him finish. Jumping up, he pulled TJ up too and hit him squarely in the face. TJ staggered back,
holding his eyes as if he were badly hurt, and Stacy momentarily let down his guard. At that moment, TJ rammed into Stacy, forcing the fight to the ground again. Little man, Christopher John, and I, with the others, circled the fighters, chanting loudly as they rolled back and forth, punching at each other. All of us were so engrossed in the battle that no one saw a mule wagon halt on the road and a giant man step out. It wasn't until I realized that the shouting had stopped behind us and that the girls and boys beside me were falling back that I looked up. Mr. Morrison towered above us. He did not look at me or Christopher John or Little Man, although I knew he had seen us, but walked straight to the fighters and lifted a still-swinging Stacy off TJ. After a long, tense moment, he said to Stacy, "You and your sister and brothers get on in the wagon." We walked through the now-silent crowd, Caleb and Dewberry Wallace standing on the front porch of the store with the Simmses. Stared at Mr. Morrison as we passed, but Mr. Morrison looked through them as if they were not there. Stacy sat in front of the wagon with Mr. Morrison. The rest of us climbed into the back.
"Now we gon' get it," shuddered Christopher John. "I told y'all we should have gone on home."
Before Mr. Morrison took the reins, he handed Stacy a handkerchief in which to wrap his bruised right hand, but he didn't say a word. And it wasn't until we had passed the crossroads leading to Great Faith that the silence was broken.
"Mr. Morrison, you gonna tell Mama?" Stacy asked huskily.
Mr. Morrison was very quiet as Jack the Mule clomped noisily along the dry road.
"Seems I heard your Mama tell y'all not to go up to that Wallace store," he said at last.
"Yes, sir," said Stacy, glancing nervously at Mr. Morrison. Then he blurted out,
"But I had good reason."
"Ain't never no reason good enough to go disobey your mama."
The boys and I looked woefully at each other, and my bottom stung from the awful thought of Mama's leather strap against it.
"But Mr. Morrison," I cried anxiously, "TJ was hiding there 'cause he thought Stacy wouldn't never come down there to get him. But Stacy had to go down there 'cause TJ was cheating and—"
"Hush, Cassie," Stacy ordered, turning sharply around. I faltered for only a moment before deciding that my bottom was more important than Stacy's code of honor.
"And Stacy had to take the blame for it, and Mama whipped him right in front of God and everybody."
Once the truth had been disclosed, I waited with dry throat and nauseous stomach for Mr. Morrison to say something. When he did, all of us strained tensely forward.
"I ain't gonna tell her," he said quietly.
Christopher John sighed with relief.
"Ain't going down there no more, neither," he promised.
Little Man and I agreed. But Stacy stared long and hard at Mr. Morrison.
"How come, Mr. Morrison?" he asked. "How come you ain't going to tell Mama?"
Mr. Morrison slowed Jack as we turned into the road leading home.
"'Cause I'm leaving it up to you to tell her."
"What?" we exclaimed together.
"Sometimes a person's got to fight," he said slowly. "But that store ain't the place to be doing it. From what I hear, folks like them Wallaces got no respect at all for color folks, and they just think it's funny when we fight each other. Your mama knowed them Wallaces ain't good folks. That's why she don't want y'all down there. And y'all owe it to her and y'all selves to tell her. But I'm gonna leave it up to y'all to decide."
Stacy nodded thoughtfully and wound the handkerchief tighter around his wounded hand. His face was not scarred, so if he could just figure out a way to explain the bruises on his hand to Mama without lying, he was in the clear. For Mr. Morrison had not said that he had to tell her. But for some reason I could not understand, he said,
"All right, Mr. Morrison, I'll tell her." "Boy, you crazy," I cried,
as Christopher John and Little Man speedily came to the same conclusion. If he didn't care about his own skin, he could at least consider ours. But he seemed not to hear us, as his eyes met Mr. Morrison's, and the two of them smiled in subtle understanding. the distance between them fading. As we neared the house, Mr. Granger's Packard rolled from the dusty driveway. Mr. Morrison directed Jack to the side of the road until the big car had passed, then swung the wagon back into the road's center and up the drive. Big Ma was standing by the yard gate that led onto the drive, gazing across the road at the forest.
"Big Ma, what was Mr. Granger doing here?" Stacy asked, jumping from the wagon and going to her.
Little man, Christopher John, and I hopped down and followed him.
"Nothing," Big Ma replied absently, her eyes still on the forest.
"Just worrying me about this land again."
"Oh," said Stacy, his tone indicating that he considered the visit of no importance.
Mr. Granger had always wanted the land. He turned and went to help Mr. Morrison. Little man and Christopher John went with him, but I remained by the gate with Big Ma.
"Big Ma," I said, "what Mr. Granger need more land for?"
"Don't need it," Big Ma said flatly. "Got more land now than he know what to do with."
"Well, what he want with ours then?"
"Just like to have it, that's all."
"Well, seems to me he's just being greedy. You ain't gonna sell it to him, are you?"
Big Ma didn't answer me. Instead, she pushed open the gate and walked down the drive and across the road into the forest. I ran after her. We walked in silence down the narrow cow path which wound through the old forest to the pond. As we neared the pond, the forest gaped open into a wide, brown glade, man-made by the felling of many trees, some of them still on the ground. They had been cut during the summer after Mr. Anderson came from Strawberry with an offer to buy the trees. The offer was backed with a threat, and Big Ma was afraid. So Anderson's lumbermen came, chopping and sawing, destroying the fine old trees. Papa was away on the railroad then, but Mama sent Stacy for him. He returned and stopped the cutting, but not before many of the trees had already fallen. Big Ma surveyed the clearing without a word. Then, stepping around the rotting trees, she made her way to the pond and sat down on one of them. I sat close beside her and waited for her to speak. After a while, she shook her head and said, "I'm sure glad your grandpa never had to see none of this. He dearly loved these here old trees. Him and me, we used to come down here early mornings, or just before the sun was about to set, and just sit and talk. He used to call this place his thinking spot. And he called that old pond there Caroline, after me." She smiled vaguely, but not at me. "You know, I wasn't hardly 18 when Paul Edward married me and brung me here. He was older than me by about 8 years, and he was smart. Oh, my Lord, that was one smart man. He had himself a mind like a steel trap. Anything he seen done, he could do it. He had done learned carpentry back up there near Macon, Georgia, where he was born. Born into slavery, he was. 2 years for freedom come. And him and his mama stayed on at that plantation after the fighting was finished. But then, when he got to be 14, and his mama died, he left that place and worked his way across here up to Vicksburg. That's where he met you, ain't it, Big Ma?" I asked, already knowing the answer. Big Ma nodded, smiling. "Sure was. He was carpentering up there, and my papa took me in with him to Vicksburg. We was tenant farming about 30 miles from there to see about getting a store-bought rocker for my mama. And there was old Paul Edward working in that furniture shop just as big. Had himself a good job. But that old job wasn't what he wanted. He wanted himself some land. Kept on and kept on talking about land. And then this place come up for sale. And he bought himself 200 acres from that Yankee, didn't he?" Big Ma chuckled. "That man went right on over to see Mr. Hollenbeck and said, 'Mr. Hollenbeck, I understand you got land to sell, and I'd be interested in buying me about 200 acres if your price is right.' Old Mr. Hollenbeck questioned him good about where he was gonna get the money to pay him. But Paul Edward just said, 'Don't seem to me it's your worry about how I'm gonna get the money.
just long as you get paid your price.
Didn't nothing scare that man?
She beamed proudly, and Mr. Hollenbeck went on and let him have it. Of course, now, he was just about as eager to sell this land as Paul Edward was to buy. He'd had it for gone on nigh 20 years. Bought it during Reconstruction from the Grangers, 'cause they didn't have no money to pay their taxes. Not only didn't have tax money, didn't have no money at all. That war left them plumb broke. Their old Confederate money wasn't worth nothing, and both Northern and Southern soldiers had done ransacked their place. Them Grangers didn't have nothing but their land left, and they had to sell 2,000 acres of it to get money to pay them taxes and rebuild the rest of it. And that Yankee bought the whole 2,000. Then he turned around and tried to sell it back to him, huh, Big Ma?
Sure did, but not till 87, when your grandpa bought himself that 200 acres. As I hears it, that Yankee offered to sell all 2,000 acres back to Harlan Granger's daddy for less than the land was worth. But that old Fillmore Granger was just about as tight with the penny as anybody ever lived, and he wouldn't buy it back. So Mr. Hollenbeck just let other folks know he was selling, and it didn't take long for he sold all of it, 'cause it was some mighty fine land. Besides your grandpa, a bunch of other small farmers bought up 800 acres, and Mr. Jameson bought the rest.
But that wasn't our Mr. Jameson, I supplied knowingly. That was his daddy.
Charles Jameson was his name, Big Ma said. A fine old gentleman, too. He was a good neighbor, and he always treated us fair, just like his son. The Jamesons was what folks call Old South, from up in Vicksburg, and as I understands it, before the war, they had as much money as anybody, and even after the war, they managed better than some folks 'cause they had made themselves some Northern money. Anyways, old Mr. Jameson got it in his mind that he wanted a farm, and he moved his family from Vicksburg down in here. Mr. Wade Jameson wasn't but about 8 years old then.
But he didn't like the farm, I said.
Oh, he liked it all right. Just wasn't never much hand at it, though. And after he went up north to law school and all, he just felt he ought to practice his law.
Is that how come he sold Grandpa them other 200 acres?
Sure is. And it was mighty good of him to do it, too. My Paul Edward had been eyeing that 200 acres ever since 1910, when he done paid off the bank for them first 200. But old Mr. Jameson didn't want to sell. About that same time, Harlan Granger come head of the Granger plantation. You know, him and Wade Jameson about the same year's children. And he wanted to buy back every inch of land that used to belong to the Grangers. That man crazy about anything that was before that war, and he wanting his land to be every bit like it was then. Already had more than 4,000 acres, but he just itching to have back them other 2,000 his granddaddy sold. Got back 800 of them, too, from them other farmers that brought from Mr. Hollenbeck.
But Grandpa and old Mr. Jameson wasn't interested in selling, period, was they, Big Ma? They didn't care how much money Mr. Granger offered them, I declared with an emphatic nod.
That's the truth of it, all right, agreed Big Ma. But when Mr. Jameson died in 1918, and Wade come head of the family, he sold them 200 acres to Paul Edward, and the rest of his land to Harlan Granger, and moved his family into Strawberry. He could have just as easy sold the full 1,000 acres to the Grangers and gotten more money, but he didn't. And till this day, Harlan Granger still hold it against him 'cause he didn't.
The soft swish of falling leaves made Big Ma look up from the pond and at the trees again. Her lips curved into a tender smile as she looked around thoughtfully.
You know, she said, I can still see my Paul Edward's face the day Mr. Jameson sold him them 200 acres. He put his arms around me and looked out at his new piece of land. Then he said exactly the same thing he said when he grabbed himself that first 200 acres, said, Pretty Caroline, how you like to work this fine piece of earth with me?
Sure did.
Said the exact same thing.
She grew quiet then, and rubbed the wrinkles down one hand as if to smooth them away. I gazed at the pond, glassy gray and calm, until she was ready to go on. I had learned that at times like these, it was better to just sit and wait than to go asking disrupting questions which might vex her.
"So long ago now," she said eventually, in a voice that was almost a whisper. "We worked real hard getting them crops sown, getting them reaped. We had us a time. But there was good times, too. We was young and strong when we started out, and we liked to work. Neither one of us, I'm proud to say, never was lazy, and we didn't raise us no lazy children, neither. Had ourselves 6 fine children. Lost our girls when they was babies, though. I suppose that's one of the reasons I love your sweet mama so much. But them boys grew strong, and all of them loved this place as much as Paul, Edward, and me. They go away. They always come back to it. Couldn't leave it." She shook her head and sighed. "Then Mitchell, he got killed in the war, and Kevin got drowned." Her voice faded completely, but when she spoke again, it had hardened, and there was a determined glint in her eyes. "Now, all the boys I got is my baby boys, your papa and your Uncle Hammer, and this they place as much as it is mine. They blood's in this land, and hear that Harlan Granger always talking about buying it. He pestered Paul Edward to death about buying it. Now he's pestering me." "Huh," she grumped angrily. "He don't know nothing about me or this land he think I'm gonna sell." She became silent again. A cold wind rose, biting through my jacket, and I shivered. Big Ma looked down at me for the first time. "You cold?" No, ma'am, I stuttered, not ready to leave the forest.
"Don't you be lying to me, girl," she snapped, putting out her hand. "It's time we was going back to the house anyways. Your mama'll be home soon." I took her hand, and together we left the Caroline. Despite our every effort to persuade Stacy otherwise, when Mama came home, he confessed that he had been fighting TJ at the Wallace store and that Mr. Morrison had stopped it. He stood awkwardly before her, disclosing only those things which he could honorably mention. He said nothing of TJ's cheating, or that Christopher John, Little Man, and I had been with him. And when Mama asked him a question, he could not answer honestly. He simply looked at his feet and refused to speak. The rest of us sat fidgeting nervously throughout the interview, and when Mama looked our way, we swiftly found somewhere else to rest our eyes. Finally, seeing that she had gotten all the information she was going to get from Stacy, Mama turned to us. "I suppose you three went to the store too, huh?" But before any of us could squeak an answer, she exclaimed, "That does it!" and began to pace the floor, her arms folded, her face cross. Although she scolded us severely, she did not whip us. We were sent to bed early, but we didn't consider that a punishment, and we doubted that Mama did either. How we had managed to escape a whipping we couldn't fathom until Saturday, when Mama woke us before dawn and piled us into the wagon. Taking us southwest toward Smellings Creek, she said, "Where we're going, the man is very sick, and he doesn't look like other people. But I don't want you to be afraid or uncomfortable when you see him. Just be yourselves." We rode for almost 2 hours before turning onto a backwoods trail. We were jarred and bounced over the rough road until we entered a clearing where a small, weather-grayed house stood and fields stretched barren beyond it. As Mama pulled up on the reins and ordered us down, the front door cracked warily open, but no one appeared. Then Mama said, "Good morning, Mrs. Barry. It's Mary Logan, David's wife." The door swung wide then, and an elderly woman, frail and toothless, stepped out. Her left arm hung crazily at her side, as if it had been broken long ago, but had not mended properly, and she walked with a limp. Yet she smiled widely, throwing her good arm around Mama and hugging her. "Land sakes, child, ain't you something," she exclaimed. "Come to see about these old bones. I just says to Sam, I says, who you reckon come to see old folks like us? These your babies, ain't they?
Lord almighty, ain't they fine? Sure is.
She hugged each of us and ushered us into the house. The interior was dark, lit only by the narrow slat of gray daylight allowed in by the open door. Stacy and I carried cans of milk and butter, and Christopher John and Little Man each had a jar of beef and a jar of Crowder peas which Mama and Big Ma had canned. Mrs. Barry took the food, her thanks intermingled with questions about Big Ma, Papa, and others. When she had put the food away, she pulled stools from the darkness and motioned us to sit down. Then she went to the blackest corner and said, "Daddy, who you s'pose done come to see about us?" There was no recognizable answer, only an inhuman guttural wheezing. But Mrs. Barry seemed to accept it and went on.
"Miss Logan and her babies, ain't that something?"
She took a sheet from a nearby table. "Got's to cover him," she explained. "He can't hardly stand to have nothing touch him." When she was visible again, she picked up a candle stump and felt around a table for matches. "He can't speak no more. The fire burned him too bad, but he understands all right." Finding the matches, she lit the candle and turned once more to the corner. A still form lay there staring at us with glittering eyes. The face had no nose, and the head no hair. The skin was scarred, burned, and the lips were wizened black, like charcoal. As the wheezing sound echoed from the opening that was a mouth, Mama said, "Say good morning to Mrs. Barry's husband, children." The boys and I stammered a greeting, then sat silently, trying not to stare at Mr. Barry during the hour that we remained in the small house. But Mama talked softly to both Mr. and Mrs. Barry, telling them news of the community, as if Mr. Barry were as normal as anyone else. After we were on the main road again, having ridden in thoughtful silence over the wooded trail, Mama said quietly, "The Wallaces did that, children. They poured kerosene over Mr. Barry and his nephews and lit them a fire. One of the nephews died. The other one is just like Mr. Barry." She allowed this information to penetrate the silence, then went on. "Everyone knows they did it. And the Wallaces even laugh about it, but nothing was ever done. They're bad people, the Wallaces. That's why I don't want you to ever go to their store again. For any reason. You understand?" We nodded, unable to speak, as we thought of the disfigured man lying in the darkness. On the way home, we stopped at the homes of some of Mama's students, where families poured out of tenant shacks to greet us. At each farm, Mama spoke of the bad influence of the Wallaces, of the smoking and drinking permitted at their store, and asked that the family's children not be allowed to go there. The people nodded and said she was right. She also spoke of finding another store to patronize, one where the proprietors were more concerned about the welfare of the community. But she did not speak directly of what the Wallaces had done to the Barrys, for, as she explained later, that was something that wavered between the known and the unknown, and to mention it outright to anyone outside of those with whom you were closest was not wise. There were too many ears that listened for others besides themselves, and too many tongues that wagged to those they shouldn't. The people only nodded, and Mama left. When we reached the Turner farm, Moe's widowed father rubbed his stubbled chin and squinted across the room at Mama.
"Miss Logan," he said, "you know I feels the same way you do about them low-down Wallaces, but it ain't easy to just stop shopping there. They overcharges me, and I has to pay them high interest, but I gots credit there 'cause Mr. Montier signs for me. Now, you know most folks round here sharecropping on Montier, Granger, or Harris land, and most of them just about got to shop at the Wallace store, or up at the Mercantile in Strawberry, which is just about as bad. Can't go no place else."
Mama nodded solemnly, showing she understood. Then she said, "For the past year now, our family's been shopping down at Vicksburg. There are a number of stores down there, and we've found several that treat us well."
"Vicksburg?"
Mr. Turner echoed, shaking his head. Lord, Miss Logan, you ain't expecting me go all the way to Vicksburg. That's an overnight journey in a wagon down there and back.
Mama thought on that a moment. What if someone would be willing to make the trip for you? Go all the way to Vicksburg and bring back what you need?
Won't do no good, retorted Mr. Turner. I got no cash money.
Mr. Montier signs for me up at that Wallace store so's I can get my tools, my mule, my seed, my fertilizer, my food, and what few clothes I need to keep my children from running around plumb naked. When cotton picking time comes, he sells my cotton, takes half of it, pays my debt up at that store and my interest for their credit, then charges me 10% to 15% more as risk money for signing for me in the first place. This year I earned me near $200 after Mr. Montier took his half of the crop money, but I ain't seen a penny of it. In fact, if I manage to come out even without owing that man nothing, I figure I've had a good year. Now, who way down in Vicksburg gonna give a man like me credit?
Mama was very quiet and didn't answer.
I sure sorry, Miss Logan. I'm gonna keep my young'uns from up at that store, but I gots to live. Y'all got it better than most of the folks round here, 'cause y'all gots your own place, and y'all ain't got a cowtail to a lot of this stuff. But you gotta understand, it ain't easy for sharecropping folks to do what you asking.
Mr. Turner, Mama said in a whisper, what if someone backed your signature? Would you shop up in Vicksburg then?
Mr. Turner looked at Mama strangely.
Now, who'd sign for me?
If someone would you do it?
Mr. Turner gazed into the fire, burning to a low ash, then got up and put another log on it, taking his time as he watched the fire shoot upward and suck in the log. Without turning around, he said,
When I was a wee little boy, I got burnt real bad. It healed over, but I ain't never forgot the pain of it. It's an awful way to die.
Then turning, he faced Mama.
Miss Logan, you find someone to sign my credit, and I'll consider it deeply.
After we left the Turners, Stacy asked,
Mama, who you gonna get to sign?
But Mama, her brow furrowed, didn't reply. I started to repeat the question, but Stacy shook his head, and I settled back wondering, then fell asleep.
Chapter 5. The blue-black shine that had so nicely encircled TJ's left eye for over a week had almost completely faded by the morning TJ hopped into the back of the wagon beside Stacy and snuggled in a corner not occupied by the butter, milk, and eggs Big Ma was taking to sell at the market in Strawberry. I sat up front beside Big Ma, still sandy-eyed and not believing that I was actually going. The second Saturday of every month was market day in Strawberry, and for as far back as I could remember, the boys and I had been begging Big Ma to take us to it. Stacy had actually gone once, but Christopher John, Little Man, and I had always been flatly denied the experience. We had, in fact, been denied so often that our pestering now occurred more out of habit than from any real belief that we would be allowed to go. But this morning, while the world lay black, Big Ma called,
Cassie? Get up, child, if you're gonna go to town with me, but be quiet about it. You wake up Christopher John, or Little Man, and I'll leave you here. I don't want them crying all over the place 'cause they can't go.
As Jack swept the wagon into the gray road, Big Ma pulled tightly on the reins and grumbled,
Hold on, you Jack, hold on. I ain't got no time to be putting up with both you and TJ's foolishness.
TJ? Stacy and I exclaimed together. He going?
Big Ma didn't answer immediately. She was occupied in a test of wills with Jack. When hers had prevailed and Jack had settled into a moderate trot, she replied moodily, Mr. Avery come by after y'all was asleep last night wanting TJ to go to Strawberry to do some shopping for a few things he couldn't get at the Wallace store.
Lord, that's all I need with all the trouble about is for that child to talk me to death for 22 miles.
Big Ma didn't need to say any more, and she didn't. TJ was far from her favorite person, and it was quite obvious that Stacy and I owed our good fortune entirely to TJ's obnoxious personality. TJ, however, was surprisingly subdued when he settled into the wagon. I suppose that at 3:30 in the morning, even TJ's mouth was tired. But by dawn, when the December sun was creeping warily upward, shooting pale streams of buff-colored light through the forest, he was fully awake and chattering like a cockatoo. His endless talk made me wish that he had not managed to wheedle his way so speedily back into Stacy's good graces. But Big Ma, her face furrowed in distant thoughts, did not hush him. He talked the rest of the way into Strawberry, announcing as we arrived, "Well, children, open your eyes and take in Strawberry, Mississippi." "Is this it?" I cried, a gutting disappointment enveloping me as we entered the town. Strawberry was nothing like the tough, sprawling bigness I had envisioned. It was instead a sad, red place. As far as I could see, the only things modern about it were a paved road which cut through its center and fled northward away from it, and a spindly row of electrical lines. Lining the road were strips of red dirt, splotched with patches of brown grass and drying mud puddles, and beyond the dirt and the mud puddles, gloomy store buildings set behind raised wooden sidewalks and sagging verandas. "Shoot," I grumbled. "It sure ain't nothing to shout about." "Hush up, Cassie," Big Ma said. "You too, TJ. Y'all in town now, and I expects y'all to act like it. In another hour, this place'll be teeming up with folks from all over the county, and I don't want no trouble." As the stores gave way to houses still sleeping, we turned onto a dirt road which led past more shops and beyond to a wide field dotted with wooden stalls. Near the field entrance, several farm wagons and pickups were already parked, but Big Ma drove to the other side of the field where only two wagons were stationed. Climbing from the wagon, she said, "Don't seem like too many folks ahead of us. In the summer, I'd have had to come on Friday and spend the night to get a spot like this." She headed toward the back of the wagon. "Stacy, you and TJ, stay up there a minute and push them milk cans over here so's I can reach 'em." "Big Ma," I said, following her, "all them folks up there selling milk and eggs too?" "Not all, I reckon. Some of 'em got meat and vegetables, quilts and sewing and such, but I guess a good piece of 'em selling the same as us." I studied the wagons parked at the field entrance, then exclaimed, "Well, what the devil we doing way back here then? Can nobody see us?"
"You watch your mouth, girl," warned Big Ma.
Then, arranging the milk cans and baskets of eggs near the wagon's edge, she softened her voice and promised, "We'll do all right. I got me some regular customers, and they'll check to see if I'm here for they buy."
"Not back here they won't," I grumbled.
Maybe Big Ma knew what she was doing, but it made absolutely no sense to me to be so far from the entrance. Most of the other farmers seemed to have the right idea, and I couldn't help but try to make her see the business sense in moving the wagon forward.
"Why don't we move our wagon up there with them other wagons, Big Ma? There's plenty of room, and we can sell more."
"Them's white folks' wagons, Cassie," Big Ma said gruffly, as if that explained everything. "Now, hush up and help me get this food out."
"Shoot,"
I mumbled, taking one of the buckets from Stacy. "By the time a body walk way back here, they'll have bunions on their soles and corns on their toes." By noon, the crowd which had covered the field during the early morning had thinned noticeably, and the wagons and trucks began to pack up and head for town. After we had eaten our cold lunch of oil sausages and cornbread washed down with clabber milk, we did the same. On the main street of Strawberry once more, Big Ma parked the wagon in front of a building where four shingles hung from a rusted post. One of the shingles read, "Wade W. Jameson, Attorney at Law."
"Mr. Jameson live here?" I cried, scrambling down. "I want to see him."
"He don't live here," said Big Ma, opening her large purse. She pulled out a long manila envelope, checked inside, then gingerly put it back again. This here's his office, and I got some business with him. You get on back in the wagon. Big Ma climbed down, but I didn't get back in.
Can't I just go up and say hey?
I persisted.
I'm gonna hey you, Big Ma said. You keep pestering me.
She glanced over at Stacy and TJ. Y'all wait here for me, and soon's I get back, we'll go do that shopping so's we can get on home, before it gets dark. When she had gone inside, TJ said,
What you want to see that old white man for anyway, Cassie?
What you and him got to talk about?
I just want to see him, that's all, I said, going to the raised sidewalk and taking a seat. I like Mr. Jameson, and I didn't mind admitting it.
He came to see us several times a year, mainly on business, and although the boys and I were somewhat shy of him, we were always glad to see him. He was the only white man I had ever heard address Mama and Big Ma as Mrs., and I liked him for it. Besides that, in his way, he was like Papa. Ask him a question, and he would